Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Hello.
Good morning.
How are you, chaps?
Oh, good, man.
All right, bud.
Are you good?
How are you?
I don't sleep very well. I can see Perrin's also a little sleepy.
Groggy, geez, like.
Welcome to the video store.
Yeah.
Thank you for wandering in to our lovely video store.
Yes.
You've got one very sprightly fellow behind the counter, Graham G-Force Hackney, who is a video editor and the producer of the show.
Yeah.
We're not working behind the counter. We've got a somewhat sleepy Perrin.
Yeah, I'm here.
Who's a jack of all trades in the film industry.
Yeah.
And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And yesterday we celebrated my 40th birthday.
Yes, we did.
And I'm now into my 40s.
Yeah.
We're just... peopling and socializing can sometimes keep you up.
Oh, yes.
Where even though I had myself a lovely lunch here at the Bioscope,
I
still struggled to sleep last night.
Shame.
But it is all good.
Yeah, there was one point where you were like running around and like your wife was like, just please enjoy your party. Please just sit down and like enjoy it.
Yeah, I really wanted to do it at the Bioscope. Mm. That felt like the right place to share, you know, with everyone. And I've often done my birthdays at the Bioscope because it's been 15 years of running this business.
Yes.
And some of the random birthdays along the way, the joke was always, you don't have to buy me a present. Just come and buy a pizza and a beer for my birthday.
Right.
Like that, one of the few occasions where that will actually be a present for your friend. And then, I don't know, the milestone of it, it just felt right to do it at the Bioscope.
Yeah.
So it was lovely. And I was also able to make a nice special announcement.
Yes.
Something I've sort of vaguely hinted at on the show, which was that I'm going to be a dad.
Yeah.
Yay.
This is very exciting. So
it's cute, man.
as we go along for at least the rest of this year, it'll be something I'll have to very much be involved in and get my head into.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I think we should talk. We should make some fun lists.
Yeah, dad lists.
Dad lists. Yes. Best pregnancy scenes.
I got you. I'll do this.
Kids first movies list.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to do that. Oh my God. So first movie your kids should watch should be... Have you heard of a movie called The Human Centipede? It's like The Hungry Caterpillar, but... Yeah. Just arts, you know? Just,
Oh, God.
Awesome.
A big movie we'll talk about today is Together, which is a great horror film that Perrin, you had a chance to watch.
Yep, good. Yeah. Cool.
I have been overseas. I was away last week, and so I'm a little out of the loop, even over the movies that we are screening at the Bioscope. So I missed an exhibitor screening of Together. It happened on a sort of random weekday morning, but I couldn't stay, and there was issues with the projector at this particular cinema, so I never got a chance to watch it.
Oh shoot.
And then it started, you know, and the film unlocked to be able to be screened at the Bioscope while I was away, so I haven't had a chance to watch this movie.
Okay,
so I'm keen to get into that. Alien Earth is a lovely TV show that you guys have been watching.
Yep.
So we'll get into all of that. But before we do it, this is also just to say that today's shift, is brought to us by Sony.
Yes.
Who are wanting to remind everyone, especially our listeners, because I think our listeners are the perfect listeners to know that the film Caught Stealing is on its way at the end of the month. It's going to come out on the 29th of August around the world, including the Bioscope.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are on sale. This is the new film from Darren Aronofsky, who... gives people behind the counter chubs. This is Requiem for a Dream, Whale, Mother, Black Swan. Mm-hmm. So this is a really fucking cool.
Looks fun.
It looks really fun. It looks cool. I just realized the other day it's based off a book.
Yes.
Mm.
Someone called Charlie Hudson? Houston? Huston? Anyone heard of the guy?
No.
Okay. We must talk book adaptations because
yes.
I am well underway reading Project Hail Mary. So cool. We must get into that at some point.
Mm. Yes.
That is a very exciting movie that's going to come out next year.
Yeah, March next year.
March next year with old Goz.
Yeah.
The Goz.
Yes.
And so I'm reading it because I want to be that guy.
Cool.
I want to be as cool as you two that have read all these books before they become movies.
Yeah.
I've very rarely done it in my life. Mm. And so I brought it up often on the show. All right. We like to catch up with a little round of Hey, Did You Guys See?
Yeah.
Does anyone want to kick it off?
Sure.
Yeah, I'll go for it.
Oh, we may as well start with this one. This one's sad.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, did you guys see that Terrence Stamp died?
Yeah.
I did see that.
Yeah. That sucks.
He confuses me.
Oh,
yes. You know, the twin flames.
Okay.
Often you find, you know, like the two redheads in Hollywood that everyone gets confused. Bryce Dallas Howard and...
Oh, and...
that one.
Jessica Chastain. Oh, yes.
So for me, this guy reminds me of the dude who was in Clockwork Orange.
McDowell?
Yeah.
Andy McDowell.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was confused.
Andy McDowell's a woman. A woman.
Yeah, from
Day. Yes, no, I know who you're talking about.
I'm getting it now for you.
Thanks. Orange.
Yeah, he played Rupert Murdoch as well.
Yeah.
But while Perrin is googling the fellow who
Malcolm
died,
McDowell.
Malcolm. Yeah. Yes, thank you.
What has this guy done?
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah, he's
the
trance drag queen in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. He's the old queen in Priscilla, and he was in. He was Zod.
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably his best known role.
Yeah,
is Zod in Superman and Superman 2.
He was great little underseen movie, The Limey, which is Steven Soderbergh. He's like the protagonist in that.
Limey.
Yeah, The Limey. He plays a guy who's just come out of prison and he wants to investigate the mysterious death of his daughter. It's really, really cool little like noir thriller thing. But yeah, Terrence Stamp was great.
Yeah.
Okay, this is just old age, eh?
Yeah, he was 88, 87, something like
that. Yeah, he was old. Yeah. But Priscilla was, I think, my favorite performance of his.
Of course, he's in The Phantom Menace as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He's Chancellor Valorum.
That's right.
He's based on Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes.
He was Chancellor Valorum.
He was like a senator. He was
one of the guys
in
the big scenes with the bubbles.
He was like the guy who basically gave up power because everyone was like, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well.
Yeah, sucks.
Nice to mention that.
Good actor.
Great character actor.
Mm. I've always wanted to watch Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah, Cole and I were saying we should screen it. That would be a good Video Store Presents.
Yeah, it's a great little movie. Yeah.
And now we've got the great opportunity to do it.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, let's look at that.
Cool.
Okay. Hey, did you guys see... the Bioscope has made an interesting little tweak to our website. Sorry, I want to use this Hey, Did You Guys See? as a little bit of a chance to mention some stuff. I've designed the coming attractions page a bit better.
Okay.
We've spoken about this, Graham.
Yeah.
You've mentioned it. And now, while I was away, it was quite nice to take these kinds of holidays where you can sort of think of all the things that are quite important but not necessarily urgent.
Mm.
And I've done two tweaks, one of which is just a simple thing I wanted to mention now, which is that it'll be a lot easier to see what's screening today and what's screening tomorrow and what's screening the next day. I know that sounds painfully fucking obvious.
No, yeah.
But the Bioscope before first gave you a way to see by film, which I think is the approach that a Bioscope person looks for the most, which is when is that film screening and I will make time to watch it, because we only have the one cinema. It's not like, oh, I'm sure it'll screen today, just what time?
Yeah.
So we're not that kind of cinema, but we never successfully showed you what's screening today, what's tomorrow. It was a list that sort of just scrolled down and you would have to pay a lot of attention to like what day it was. Now I've made it a little bit clearer.
Okay, cool.
And that's going to be actioned now this week, which is cool. So I feel if my life and my sort of information architecture just feels neater and more feng shui, which I think was needed.
Cool.
The other thing, Perrin, I think you'd appreciate is the other thing I sort of actioned and paid for and is underway is a cabinet that's going to hold posters.
Oh, cool. Oh.
Because we are collecting a cuckload of posters. And we want to be able to find a nice way of storing them and looking after them so that we can sell them to people. And so what we have now is currently a system where it's in a roll somewhere and a staff member will go and find it and we'll give you one of these posters of a movie that's screening. But I'm building like a customized cabinet
that'll
have drawers
that's very
for these posters. Because over in the cafe side, we've got those maxi posters, which are not from the film distributors. Those are just those ones that everyone knows, those kinds of posters. I'm living my childhood dream of like owning one of those in my shop.
Oh, were you? It's like a Rolodex of
the
posters.
The Rolodex of posters. Because when you were a little kid, like you just loved looking at those and buying posters from the Musica or the, you know. Now I get to pick them for myself. And I just hope that other people dig them too. But we often find ourselves with like just single ones left. You know, when all of them have gone and I don't have more stock.
Yeah.
Because I'm often picking the stock that's there's not a lot of stock of.
Yes.
You know, they got thousands of fucking Cristiano Ronaldo posters.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction and, posters,
Yeah, but so I get the Pulp Fiction ones, I get the more interesting ones. So I'm going to have that display stand soon, which I think will be a nice way. And I also thought to myself, when buying or customizing something like this, I will always use this. Even if it ends up in my own home.
Yeah, for sure.
It'll store my posters or artworks. I'll find a use for it. So I thought you'd appreciate that.
Nah, I do appreciate that.
Because you're, you're a collector.
Yeah, I collect posters as well. Fuck, I've got... It's such a problem that I collect all these things that just take up all the space in the world.
Yeah, I've got to quite carefully figure this out. And I also, I'm a sucker for a good system. So now when I get... Let's just say a movie like Weapons. They'll give me five. So I want to keep two. In some cases, maybe just one, but in some cases, two. And I like immediately put them into storage and I've cataloged them. And those are for my personal archive. And then the remaining three, like one will go up and then like two we can sell. And then I think I can always get more from them if they do well. And there's certain films where people are like, can I get the poster?
Especially if it's a good poster design. You know, like Together's a great poster. Like it's like a cool, evocative image. You know?
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing that like I think will look cool in like an office or like a person's like cinema room or like... Because when I first commissioned these artworks that we do sell in the Bioscope, after a while I was like, will anyone fucking buy this? Like, I think it's cool. And then you go... Wait, where would you even fucking put this? And you're like, okay, man cave. But then I was like, okay, I told the staff, I was like, when people are looking at the artworks, you can say, you can put this in your TV room. And then like someone will click and go, oh, okay, well, that
like
makes sense.
Like a movie room,
That's why
yeah.
the Big Lebowski poster could be there.
Yeah, so, exactly.
It's in the cinema, it's in the, even if it's just a TV room.
Anyways. No, exactly.
So yeah, I'm excited for those like little changes, which I thought would be nice to tell you guys about.
Cool.
No, that's cool. Yeah. Hey, did you guys see Tarantino still won't shut the fuck up about his 10th and final film? Okay, so...
Why would he shut
up?
He's a filmmaker and he's going to make a film.
But the thing is with Tarantino is he won't shut the fuck up about, oh, 10 has to be my final film. It has to be, it will be.
It feels so arbitrary.
You're like, but he won't stop going on about it. So
especially
like,
since he's already made more than 10 films.
Exactly, but he doesn't count Kill Bill Volume 2 as another movie. It's, one movie. But anyways, so the thing with Tarantino is... So obviously he was going to do a movie called, I can't remember if it was going to be called The Critic.
Yes.
But I remember reading about that.
Yeah, I think Brad Pitt was supposed to play the lead or something. But anyways, he scrapped that because he said, who wants to watch a movie about a film critic? He thinks it'd be boring. So, okay, whatever, sure. He says he loved the script, but he was like, oh, no one's going to want to watch this. But I don't understand that logic because with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, My gripe with it is, so I think without the Manson murders thing at the end, I feel like that's tacked on, because otherwise I think it's quite a great hangout movie. You know what I mean? And I love a hangout movie.
And a lot of people didn't understand Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It was a vibe. It was a love letter movie. It wasn't...
It's 100% a love letter movie.
Where, like, Hateful Eight was, like, actually a really great stage play.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically The Thing in a Western setting, you know? Yeah. But, so he was going on about that, because he just did a... I think it was an interview with someone, but he was, like, going through all the motions of where he is right now.
Nice. Yeah. Where is he now? Do we know anything about the new
So movie? He's moved on from that. I don't know what he's going to do next. The reason why he didn't want to do The Critic is because he felt it was going to be too similar to Once Upon a Time. So he wants to challenge himself on the last run, I suppose.
It's strange to give yourself that limitation.
Yeah.
I think,
we understand why he...
I think he's overthinking it. Hey? Yeah. I think at one point in his life, he's like... Because he said before, he wants to stop while he is still at the top of his game. But I just think that's so silly, because you look at a guy like Scorsese, who I think is the most consistent filmmaker over such a large filmography.
Mm.
You know, like... We can argue, oh, what about Ridley Scott? But he's very inconsistent. He's made like maybe 4 great movies, and everything else is very like, oh, he's just churning out shoes at a shoe factory place. You know what I mean? But with P.T. Anderson and Soderbergh, who all came up at like the same time with Tarantino, Soderbergh before, obviously. But they aren't stopping anytime soon. Yeah. They've grown and changed themselves and stuff, where Tarantino, I feel, has like kind of stayed in the same place a little bit. You know what I mean?
He picked a lane and very much stuck to it.
And I mean, the big criticism that Tarantino gets is he's a bit of a cover band. He's like a cover band director. You know?
He sort of very famously pays homage to a lot.
Yeah, where it's on the verge of like, okay, your basic Kill Bill is basically Lady Snowblood remade.
Yeah, is the word pastiche?
Maybe, yeah.
Is that a word?
Yeah, you could say pastiche.
But I mean, look, like, the thing is, even though Tarantino aggravates me, I'll still watch anything he makes.
Yeah.
It's like Wes Anderson, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm like, cool, he's back in it, let's go. And I mean, Once Upon a Time, I wasn't a fan of. I know a lot of people would be like, are you insane? But I just, it's not, for me, he'll never make a better film than Pulp Fiction or even Jackie Brown at this point. Because, but anyways, like I read in an interview, it's just interesting to see what his 3 favorite films are. So he thinks his masterpiece is Inglourious Basterds, which surprised me.
Okay.
I think it's a really good film. I don't think it's even close to being as good as Pulp Fiction or even Reservoir, even Jackie Brown. I think those 3 are his best films. But anyways, his favorite is Once Upon a Time. That checks out, because you can tell by watching that movie that this is his element. Like his favorite era of movies, he's making a movie about that, you know. And then his best one, his masterpiece is that one. His favorite is that one. And then what was the other one? Ah, shit.
You must come back to it.
No, but like it's just interesting what he sees as his favorite, even though. And it's just, it's interesting because I'd like.
What would the third be? His most fun?
I can't remember what his third one was.
His most underrated or something.
Yeah, I can't remember. But those are the 2 ones that stuck out to me. I was like, that's very interesting. Because like the thing with that, I'd love to get an idea of what other filmmakers see as their best works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
like
what is Nolan's favorite that he's made? What does he regard his masterpiece?
Yeah.
People would argue, oh, obviously Oppenheimer, because that's where he's won his first Oscars.
Yeah.
He might even...
No, that's often not the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, his favorite might be his very first film, which I know is not true.
Yes.
Because he's not a fan of his first film.
Yeah.
But brings into question, like, that's interesting, you know what I mean? Like, because you often find the cases where like the director's favorite work is not anyone's favorite work.
No,
where they're like,
no.
Oh,
yeah, I mean, they have a
shitty,
completely different relationship with it to any audience member.
It's like Scorsese. I wonder if his favorite movie is After Hours, because it's a comedy and he doesn't normally do comedies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
when you said Nolan doesn't like his first film, is that Memento?
Following
came first before Memento.
So it's a black and white film. I think he made that during film school,
I think so.
It was a feature length. Yeah, like it sure. was released in cinemas and it's in the Criterion Collection. It's not great. I'm not a fan of it. I think it's very, it's interesting watching it because you're seeing the start of a very specific kind of filmmaker. You know, he loves playing with time and time being out of place and stuff like that. Like, it's very interesting to see where the starting point comes for him.
I think that's why it's probably in the collection more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting film to watch, but I think it's his weakest film by quite a long margin, and he has even said that he's not a fan. It's like Kubrick...
Sure, no, but that makes
it's
sense.
It's like Kubrick hated his first film.
Yeah. We established yesterday at my birthday that you're about 5 years younger than me. How old are you now?
I'm 34.
34.
Yeah.
Okay, six. Yeah. You've watched considerably more movies than me. How many movies would you say you average a week?
I don't know. I think, so my thing is that I normally do is when I, so sad. First thing I
it's
do.
It's not, man. It's first, what makes you special.
When I'm not overloaded with too much work, my thing is usually I get up first thing in the morning, I watch a movie to like start my day. And then,
that's amazing.
And then at the end of the day, I'll watch another movie. It's slowed down over this year, but like that's normally what I would do. And it would normally be a mixture of a rewatch or of something I have never seen before.
That's
so
incredible. Eh? And you haven't got a Letterboxd account.
No.
You haven't got this way to like diarize
so
and pluck your
it's so
out.
It's so lame, but I started cataloging like keeping track of what I've watched and rating and stuff on IMDb, and no one uses IMDb for that. And it's too late.
It's never too late. Never too late.
Like, that's Cole's like, he's like, oh, well, you're just going to have to sit all day and recatalog everything. I was like, fuck, I don't want
to do
that.
You don't have to do it in a day. You can do it in like a year.
No, but I'm that weirdo who's like, I have to do it right now, the whole day. You know, fucking hell.
In COVID, I watched movies. Yes. That's what I did. And myself and Cole was my housemate at the time. I'd recently split with my partner, so it was nice that like Cole had moved in and he was keeping me company, and we were movie buddies. That's kind of how we started the podcast. Was saying that we were these movie buddies and we enjoyed watching movies together, and that was the origin seed of the video store. And I was hell of a proud of myself for watching two movies a day during COVID. Yes. I was like, this is fucking an achievement.
Yeah.
But that's just the normal fucking Tuesday for parents. It's amazing. Yeah. But it's very cool. And I really appreciate your knowledge. And I just wanted to point that out because, you know, I think people must just know that the extent of your watching.
Oh, thank you.
No, and just the fact that, you know, I'm 6 years ahead and I've just got nowhere on what you've clocked.
Well, I did that thing where I watched a movie every day for a year.
Yes.
That was work for me.
Yeah, it can be tough.
Because that, and also, like, speaking of ranking things, I made a list of every single movie that I watched that year. It took me longer to make the list than it did to watch all the movies.
Oh,
it took me more than a year to make the list.
Did you not, when you watched it, did you not, like,
put all of them in my diary as I was going through them.
Yeah, okay.
But then only afterwards I went back and made a list out of them.
Oh, flip.
Initially, I wasn't going to do that, but I was like, oh, let's just see.
Yeah.
And it completely like destroyed my idea of like how movies are rated. Now I don't rate movies with like numbers anymore.
Oh, yeah. So that's the thing though, as well.
You now don't rate them with numbers.
Yeah. I don't give them like a star value on Letterboxd anymore. Because I realized as I was going through it, I was like, okay, I gave that a whatever movie, 3 stars. But if I was making a list out of it, I'd put it above this other movie that I rated like 4 stars.
That's interesting,
So
it's like that those numbers kind of mean nothing.
That's the thing, though. Yeah, like I agree. Like, I mean, with even though I'll give it a rating and stuff, and in my head I'm like, I love this movie more than I love this or whatever. But it's interesting, like when I do my top 50 of the year or whatever, my number one I could have given a 4.5 out of 5 as opposed to number 2, which I gave a 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
It's just about revisited the most. You know,
to me, it's this single feeling to a single film.
Yeah,
it's not a. And so for me, when I look at like, if I were to look at my own ratings, I would know my emotion for that film.
Yeah,
and it's certainly not comparing the one to the other.
Yeah.
It's just going like that one tied it up in a bow that gets a star.
Yeah,
that one turned on the microwave in my gooey part of body and was like, that made me feel something. That gets a star for that. Yeah. Or that, like, fucking stuck with me. That gets a star.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing as well is when I do have time to write the reviews and stuff, I also never give those reviews a numerical rating. I'll give it a numerical rating on, like, IMDb.
Yeah.
But on those reviews, I never do because people forget that when you revisit things, your rating or view changes. Like, there'll be a film where I remember Lady Bird. When I first watched Lady Bird, that was getting all the hype, the Greta Gerwig movie.
Mm.
And everyone was like, this is the most amazing film. And when I watched it, I was like, yeah, it was fine. Like, it was good. It was like a 3 out of 5. I rewatched it again a few years later, 5 out of 5 for me. I was like, this is one of my favorite movies now.
Yeah.
Like,
I was telling my family on the holiday that, like, sometimes you just need to come back to certain things at certain times in your life. Like, I remember someone presenting me with Ryan Adams, not Brian Adams, the musician.
Yeah.
And it's like quite slow, down tempo, kind of shoegazy kind of rock. And I remember going, this is fucking boring. And then you hit your 30s and you're like, I get it.
Yeah. No, 100%.
I was telling my family the other day at like a big breakfast table, I saw Marmalade and I was like, maybe I'm ready for Marmalade.
Oh, yes.
Because as a kid, I thought it was fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
Like Paddington Bear.
Yeah.
I now, like, you know, I've got a bit of gray in my beard. Yeah. I'm a bit more distinguished. Turns out Marmalade still fucking disgusting. But there was a moment where I was like, I think I'm ready for Marmalade.
Yeah, it's so funny, Mom.
You're like, nope, just as shit as I remember.
My girlfriend's brother, he's in his soup era now. So he's like, he realized a few years ago. So he's turning 40 this year as well. Right. And he was like,
has he called it that?
No, he's like, I'm at that age where I order soup at restaurants.
Oh, shit. I would never order a soup at a restaurant.
Yeah, he went to a restaurant once. He realized his age recently. He was like, sat down, because he loves soup in general, but he sat down, he looked at the menu, and he's like, I think I'm going to have the soup. And he ordered the soup, and he's like, it was the best decision he's ever made.
I was forced it as a kid, and so I never like it. I never choose it.
Yeah,
the
moment
I start soup, I'm like, this is good.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I enjoy soup.
Yes.
It's like porridge. Porridge for me, there'll be times, this is like my pregnancy craving is porridge, right? So every now and then I'll be like, fuck, I really want a bowl of porridge. It could be the most hot day in summer. It could be the coldest day in winter. I can't finish it. I always get about 1/3 through it. And I'm like, I'm over this. And I wanted it so bad, you know?
One last question on breakfasts.
Oh, yes.
How do you eat your Weet-Bix?
Everybody
does it differently.
Yes.
Everybody does it differently.
I don't eat Weet-Bix.
Okay, but have you had enough to know, to have a process?
I don't really have an opinion because I don't, I've never really eaten enough of it. Yeah.
Okay, how do you eat?
You got to have two.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Minimum of two.
Yeah.
And then you mush it.
You mush it out the gate.
Yeah.
So you like turn it into a cornflakes bowl.
Yes.
Basically.
You dunk it in mush.
Yes.
Do you know what I did for the longest time was submerge it in the milk so that the bottom half is a bit sog and the top has still got some crisp.
Uh-huh.
And you delicately sprinkle some sugar on the top so that you create this like kind of cake.
Yes.
And then you eat it like a
cake. Oh, that's smart. Hey. Yeah.
Interesting.
But that's – okay, no, this is a debate. Sorry, we're going wildly off track here. Okay, how do you, I'm judging you guys, how do you like your milk with your cornflakes? Is it warm or is it room temperature or is it cold?
Cold.
Okay, good answer.
I'm not a milk bowl of cereal guy. I'm very much a yogurt man.
Okay.
I'm a yogurt granola guy.
Yeah.
Okay,
but if I were, I would want it cold and I would eat it rather quickly so that it still
doesn't get soggy.
Thank God. Okay. Yeah. I had a debate with friends recently so me and Kira, we love our cornflakes. Cold milk, crisp, delicious.
Cold and crisp.
Everyone on this trip we were with were like, no, it needs to be soggy. I'm like, fucking no. And they were like, yeah. And then, but then it differs. They're like, yeah, Rice Krispies has to be soggy as well. I'm like, absolutely not. And they were like, no, but Cocoa Pops has to be crisp. I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
it was like an arbitrary line.
Yeah, sorry.
They're called Rice Krispies.
Exactly.
Yeah, not Rice soggy.
Yes. Jesus. But yeah, cold milk. I nearly said water. Cold milk, crispy cornflakes, yes, please.
I realized we'd hit the bottom of kind of our civilization when I saw my friend on matric holiday have a breakfast cereal with beer.
Oh, wow.
He like wanted to try that. And I was like, there is no greater sign of your freedom as a human now that you have left school and you're on your first independent holiday to go, let's give this a fucking try.
But the beer was the milk alternative.
The beer was the milk of his cereal.
That's like, it's like when you realize you don't need to celebrate a birthday to buy a cake.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you can eat the whole thing if
a
you
whole
want.
A whole new chapter of your life has just opened up where you could buy your own birthday cake. No, and he was like, I'm going to give this a whirl, and instantly regretted it. Funny. Awesome. All right. Hey, did you guys see F1 has just become the highest grossing sports film of all time?
Oh, really?
That's cool.
Damn.
Maybe that deserves a fact check, but it popped up on my in my world, in my algorithm.
That's crazy because I mean, I watched it, obviously.
What could possibly rival it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously watched it, but like it's interesting how it feels like that, even though it's a loud, speedy movie, it's interesting how that's like quietly crossed that finish line. You know what I mean? Like it never popped up on my
receptors. Loved it.
I loved it as well.
And I went in thinking this was probably not going to be a bioscope movie because I was watching it in IMAX and I was like, everyone's going to watch this in IMAX. But I walked out of it and I was like, it's just got so much.
It's crazy.
It's got
yeah.
great story, great character. I thought the writing was tight.
Mm.
You gave a shit. It had all the nuance of F1 and the sophistication of F1.
The drama of it.
The drama of it. But just, you know, it's got the sort of tiny, sort of subtle calculation and manipulation. It's like taxes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like there's a way to like very carefully use the tax code, you know, to make money.
It's a great spectacle movie. I mean, like, it's not reinventing the wheel in terms
by
of story.
No, means. No.
Yeah, but Jesus, it's just a spectacle. I mean, me and Cole spoke about, I think it was Maverick once, and we were like, it's just a sheer spectacle.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
It's the best way to put it.
Those movies are built to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
Yeah, and
the best sound, and, you know.
And exactly, and so that is why I didn't think it was going to work for this little cinema room, but then I was like, it's just such a good movie, and I was like, I know how this is going to play out.
Yeah,
people are going to realize how good it is, they're going to talk about it, they're going to want to keep a cinema window.
Yeah,
so this thing is going to have a long tail.
It's still on circuit.
It's still going. I mean, with our one cinema, we just have to make space for the others, but I was like, I could keep this going for a while because especially in a Formula One season, they're going to be promoting the fuck out of it every Sunday at these races.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was like, it's stoked. But I wonder what could rival it.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
There's a bunch of baseball movies, Field of Dreams. There's a bunch of racing movies.
That's a good point.
There's a lot of football movies.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking now is because my.
But I don't think any of them had that.
No, I don't think any of them crossed.
They were always like a bit of a character drama.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember the Titans.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like this was Top Gun Maverick on a road.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy.
So the previous holder for the highest grossing sports movie.
Yeah, he's making little bunny ears.
I'm
yeah.
doing quotes, was Cars 2.
Yeah.
Which I guess technically.
No, it is.
But
it's racing,
yeah, that was the previous one, which it has now surpassed.
Okay.
Obviously, because I think it came out and got overshadowed quite quickly because Jurassic Park, Jurassic World followed it. Then Superman, then Fantastic Four. But it's obviously just been like chugging along there.
And I find it interesting that it got out there first.
Mm.
I reckon those fucking studio heads have a little underground poker game meeting.
Yeah.
And whoever gets that first slot.
Yeah, they
pays someone off or someone scratches someone's back.
It's interesting though because I know they didn't expect F1 to do so well because obviously F1's popularity has been spurred on now by obviously Drive to Survive, right? Because my theory, I don't know if it is considered a theory because it's like factually true, is that American sports. So I'm not a fan of most American sports, but American sports movies are the best sports movies. Yeah. They're incredible.
Sure.
Field of Dreams is such a great movie.
Americans know how to make those kind of heartfelt, great genre movies.
Yeah.
And they are super passionate about spreading their Americanness to the rest of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it makes sense.
But the like F1, which is a quintessentially European, quote-unquote, sport, it's only dominated.
Only in the last few seasons, due to the success of Drive to Survive, has the Formula One season extended into America more. Yeah. There was always one, so it was always a little bit of a niche, pretentious sport, a little bit like, you know, like lacrosse. You know, it was like one of those, like, quite highbrow, because America's got NASCAR, where you just go around and...
You turn right, you turn left the entire race.
Yeah. I think there's a good sports movie that deserves to be in the top five, at least, is Ricky Bobby.
That's one of Christopher Nolan's favorite movies, eh?
I know, it's fucking, it's a great comedy.
Like, people asked him, they're like, what are your favorite movies? And he names, like, these, you know, these highbrow, like, fancy movies. He's like, Ricky Bobby. He's like, he's like, every time it's on, I watch it.
Talladega Nights. There's also that great interview with Ryan Gosling where it was like, what do you tell everyone is your favorite movie? What actually is your favorite movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he said it like a Citizen Kane or something, but his favorite movie was actually Step Brothers.
All right.
This last week when I was in Mauritius, they were setting up for their... once a week or once a month, this resort does a white dinner. And you could see them sort of setting up, and it as they were setting up, in my head, only to myself, because I couldn't explain this to my wife, but I wanted to say something like the Catalina wine mixer, because it just looked like the Catalina wine mixer. This is the fucking Catalina wine mixer. And what does that guy next to him go like? Whoa! And you just he like barks, and he's like, "Why do you keep doing that every time he says it?" It's only the second biggest helicopter leasing southern coast or something. Yeah.
But that's the thing, though. Like, I feel like most of, I don't know if you do the same thing, Graham, is that like most of my conversation with people are in movie quotes. Like mostly Big Lebowski, like, oh, really tied the rim together. Oh, obviously you're not a golfer, you know. Yes. It's my, pretty much most of the things I say in any situation
I can't drink Merlot without saying
it's, I'm not drinking fucking Merlot.
I'm not gonna drink the fucking Merlot.
Yeah. Like, it's just movie quotes and seasons 2 to 10 Simpsons quotes.
I was about to say there is a Simpsons quote for
like
everything.
Literally
every situation.
Everything. One of my favorite quotes from Homer is, you know me, Marge. Yeah. I like my beer cold, my TV loud, and my homosexuals are flaming. It's so good.
And
oh my
every
God.
Time I see sea bass on the menu, and I saw that now in Mauritius.
Yeah.
In my head, only to myself, do I go, ill-tempered, mutated sea bass.
When I see sea bass, I go, kick his ass, sea bass from Dumb and Dumber.
I don't know that.
Sorry. Okay.
What is the, you're obviously not a golfer. What is that in
Big Lebowski. So it's at the beginning when, you know, when they're dunking his head in the toilet and the guy takes the bowling ball. He's like, what the fuck is this? And he's like, obviously you're not a golfer.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
You know,
good.
That's just like your opinion.
Man. Yeah, that's also one of my main things. Oh, okay. Lovely. Wow, we've veered off course.
No, I love this. Okay. I got another one. Have you got more?
I can do one more.
Yeah, you go and then I'll go.
Yeah.
Hey, okay, let's take a look. Hey, did you guys see? A while ago, Universal lost the rights to the Bourne franchise.
Oh.
Okay.
So there's been a bidding war.
Oh.
For who's going to get Jason Bourne now. Like Apple was bidding.
Okay.
Sundance, Netflix, they were all trying to get it. So now,
interesting.
The rights to to Jason Bourne,
Skydance.
Oh. Skydance, that's right. Yeah. The rights to Jason Bourne are now worth Universal. They just bought it back. In perpetuity.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah,
which makes me go, we're definitely getting another Jason Bourne movie.
Are they going to reboot that?
Yes.
Would they reboot that or would they?
I don't know, dude. I don't know. What's the point
of rebooting
it?
It feels like TV show.
It's not like a, it's not a Jason James Bond where you can like.
Yeah. Do we need more Jason Bourne movies?
Yeah, that's the thing. Those first three are
phenomenal.
Incredible.
Ultimatum in particular.
Yes.
He's like.
They're like great movies. And then the one where he has to fight Facebook or whatever that movie's about is like, this is nothing.
Yeah, the fourth and fifth ones, eh?
Especially the fifth one, though. Because the fourth one was with Jeremy Renner, which is okay. It's actually not a bad movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Tony Gilroy.
Yeah,
it was written and directed by Tony Gilroy.
Yeah, he did Michael Clayton and Andor.
Yes, yeah, he's the Andor guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really not bad. It got kind of like ripped apart at the time when it came out.
Yeah.
But it's actually not that bad. But then that fifth one that was just called Jason Bourne was like, this is nothing.
Who was Jason Bourne in that?
It was Matt Damon again. I think they'll try and they'll give him like $20 million and bring him back for one more.
I think, I mean, look, it's not like, because the world building of the Bourne identity is that there are more like him.
Exactly.
It's not just him.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So like Jeremy Renner was another guy like him.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, like I don't need more of them. I mean, I'd like to see Paul Greengrass do.
Yeah, exactly. One. Yeah. I just don't know what it's going to be. It was him again. It was Paul Greengrass again.
Oh, flip. That's disappointing.
Yeah.
Yo, we haven't seen anything by Paul Greengrass in a while. What last thing did he do?
I think he did something. He has something coming up soon on Apple.
Yeah, because before that, he did a Western with Tom Hanks. News of the World. He did that.
Oh, yes. Was that him?
I think that was Paul Greengrass. Yeah.
I'm going to look him up quickly.
He did United 93. He did Captain Phillips. He did...
I mean, he's definitely best known for the Bourne movies.
Yeah, he did the Bourne 2 and 3.
Captain Phillips. United 93. Green Zone.
Yeah, Green Zone was fine.
Green Zone was okay. Yeah, he has a movie coming out, an Apple movie called The Lost Bus.
Okay.
With Matthew McConaughey. It's a terrible title, but it actually looks like
it's
a pretty good movie.
Title.
Oh, yeah, you brought that up.
Yeah.
Speaking of Captain Phillips, I actually brought it up in a family dinner while we were on holiday. I can't remember the premise.
Did you just say, I'm the captain?
I used that quote. I was like, look at me.
Yeah.
I'm the captain now. Yeah. And they were like, what the fuck are you talking about? Oh, God.
Yeah. That's a great movie. Jeez.
Hey, did you guys see a new adaptation of Contact is coming.
Oh,
really?
Carl Sagan book.
Huh. I didn't know it was a Carl Sagan book.
Yeah, it's a Carl Sagan book.
That's cool.
This is going to come out in 2027. It's going to have Jennifer Lawrence and Andrew Garfield.
Oh, wow. Good cast.
And when it comes out in 2027, that will be 30 years since the original, which had Jodie Foster.
30.
And Matthew McConaughey.
Is it that old?
Yeah. Well, in 2027.
That's 2 years from now. That's not. No. Wow, I didn't realize it was that old.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
We're getting a lot of that kind of movie. Like, Steven Spielberg's doing an Alien Contact movie. What's his name? We were just talking about. The guy who did F1.
Joseph
Kaczynski.
Yeah.
He's doing like an Alien Contact movie.
It's
disclosure.
Yeah, it's that. I think we spoke about it recently. Where like westerns were at the peak at a certain time, then they dipped. We're in that phase now. Yes. Alien movies.
Well,
yeah.
I saw a fucking New York Times thing, so not some random blog.
Yeah,
it's a bit clickbaity because you know what it's going to end up being vaguely.
Mm.
But they were like, scientists have picked up. Like actual, what could be life on another planet?
Oh yes, yeah. I saw that as well. That's freaking
nuts. And the answer is like it's probably, you know, vague and could be, and this bacteria or this kind of thing would only exist if there was something, and so it's all a little circumstantial. But it's like we're there, we're close, which is something when we. Keep chatting. I think we should just keep chatting about Hail Mary, Project Hail Mary.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what I loved so much about it. This is a book by Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book I'm reading at the moment, so I want to kind of just bring it up vaguely across these episodes because it's ahead of the movie with Ryan Gosling, which is going to come out early next year.
Yeah.
What is so cool about it, and I'll give you this as a pitch for those who don't know, is similar to The Martian, it's a science fiction film, but it's rooted in so much real science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does a ton of research.
And so it just feels so real and credible. So without giving too much away, when humanity discovers its first kind of alien life form, it's not what you think.
Yes.
Mm.
And it's probably what it will naturally be.
Mm, yeah.
Not a
very plausible.
You know, not a you know, bug-eyed man.
Yes.
You know. So that's cool. And I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's probably what there is. But anyways, Contact.
Yeah.
That's
cool. Interesting. Yeah.
You sort of wonder why we need these reboots sometimes, but
Or just new adaptations.
I don't know how different the movie is from the book.
Yeah, I've found the book occasionally.
Okay.
in secondhand bookstores, and when I have, I've put it in the gift shop, and it's usually moved. But it's cool that that was written by Carl Sagan, who is a very little bit like Andy Weir, like it's rooted in some good science.
Yeah, I'm interested as well to see how much different, because I mean, obviously, I feel like there was an era of Hollywood where they just bastardized the book adaptations.
Yeah,
so totally. Contact might not be anything like the book.
They would just put author like that site when they put Stephen King's name on the Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Which he had nothing to do with.
Yeah, exactly. Or like
there definitely was that era of big emotional Hollywood license being taken. And one thing we tried to do once, I think I had the conversation with Cole, which is like when you think of certain eras of filmmaking, there was like, you know, the big 80s action film, where there was Rocky and Predator and mostly Arnold Schwarzenegger, in the 90s or whatever. And we were like, what era are we in now?
Yeah.
Like, what is this era of filmmaking going
to be?
And for me, it was the era of representation.
Mm. Yeah.
And that is like, you know, a film like Turning Red, which is about what it's like to be an Asian immigrant. That should be made and is and can only be made by an Asian movie.
Yeah, I think that means it is so being underrated. Done. It's so underrated. Yeah.
And so that is what is happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember being in film school, which was now well over 15, 20 years ago, where that was always the debate. Who gets to make that? Who should make that? And that's not what's happening now.
Yeah.
And now that seems to be happening.
Yeah. It's interesting because Danny Boyle recently said that if he were to make Slumdog Millionaire now, he would never have touched it. He would get a young Indian filmmaker to make it.
And he could be at the helm of it.
Yeah,
producing, he could be guiding the person and going, no, listen, you got to get more coverage.
Exactly.
Make sure you do that. Or here's a tip that always works. There's universal things that... But that's the exciting time that we're in now.
But do you know what's also scary? Is we're also in a very uncertain times in terms of like the climate of the world in terms of... political correctness, etc., right? So, like, you look at guys like Trump, who has spearheaded this whole anti-woke fucking movement, who they think, oh, anything I don't like is woke. But, like, when they say that, it's like, oh, you're just calling yourself out because you don't like empathy, you don't like...
There's so much noise that will get that will be around.
Yeah.
To me, the shining example is Sinners.
Well, yeah,
give
great
that
movie
to fucking Ryan Coogler.
Yeah,
he understands or has got a good grip on what it could have possibly been like to have been a black dude in 1930s in Mississippi.
Yeah, exactly.
Give it to fucking him.
Exactly. So like,
and watch him shine.
Yeah, exactly.
People will talk and what's woke and what's that, and I think there's horrible examples of people on both the left and the right that make this birthing pain uncomfortable.
Yeah,
but in between all of the mess, you've got a fucking Turning Red. You've got a Sinners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've got
Everything
Past
Everywhere
Lives.
Everything Everywhere All at Once. Yeah.
I think and that shit will shine through. The noise and the clutter, and listen, there's a handful of things that need to be cancelled, and that's a whole nother argument. But the good shit will shine and remain.
Yeah, I'm just glad because the people who complain about this the most are all white people who have had this privilege for so long, and they can't seem to understand that. Okay, maybe it's time to give that privilege to other people. It's like
but the argument is it's happening.
Yeah,
it will take a long time,
great.
But it is happening.
It's great. Yeah,
and it's already the crops have already been harvested in many cases.
It's great because, like you said, I mean, you got the Ryan Cooglers coming up, you got the Barry Jenkins coming up. It's not just stage in time where like, oh, Spike Lee, he's like one of four notable black directors. Yeah. You
because
know what I mean?
And people think, and any argument someone would maybe make to go, it's happening, it's done, it's cool.
No,
like it hasn't.
Yeah,
it hasn't,
there
yeah.
hasn't been a black director who's won Best Director at the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
The closest we got is an Asian man and an Asian woman.
Yeah.
But there has not been a black director winning.
Yeah.
Which shows, that's your argument for systemic.
Yeah.
Whenever someone uses 100%. The word systemic and you don't understand, There's your example. We got a female before we got a black person.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's crazy. Yeah.
Despite and, great products.
Only a handful of women have won best director.
Yeah, four.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah, four. One, yeah.
Anyways. All right.
Do you want to move on to what we've seen, what we've been watching?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's go.
All right. Tell me about Together, P-Dog.
Okay, so Together is a body horror movie. It's about a codependent relationship between James Franco and Alison Brie.
Who are together
actually
in real
married,
life.
Yeah, yeah, in real life. And I think it's a really cool, fun movie. I don't think it's as good as Weapons if we're looking at other more recent horror movies that are
and they are
creating
kind of
buzz
out at the same time. Yeah. They were released a week apart.
But yeah, I mean, the marketing behind it has been phenomenal. So like, I think it's going to do well financially. But
yeah,
we
had a nice weekend. Yeah. We didn't have a sold out weekend.
Yeah.
I think the word still needs to get around.
Yeah.
But what I like, similar to The Substance, is that we are making a lot of horrors these days.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of smart horrors.
Yeah.
I think horror has unfortunately taken a little bit of a rap of being a bit schlucky or a bit, done to just scare you.
Yeah.
Quite simplistic and maybe a bit B-grade.
Yeah.
But smarter horrors always have existed and are kind of coming to light more.
Yeah.
I love the horror that is saying something a little bit more about society or about ourselves. So like The Substance, why it could be considered for Oscars is because it was bringing up body politics and self-love. And so here you've got a scary movie, but it's about relationships and codependency.
Yeah.
But I think that's for me, I think horror is the most diverse, not diverse. When you can do a lot with something.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's diverse.
Yeah, we're sort of adaptable and flexible.
Yeah,
and
I think horror is the most exciting genre of filmmaking. I think you can say so much and also tap into so many other genres.
Yeah.
It's not just restricted to horror. Yeah. You can play with comedy, you can play with drama, you can play with thriller, you can play with romance, and Together does that. You know what I mean?
You can do that the other way around as well, inserting horror into stuff that's not typically horror. Jurassic Park does it like incredibly
Jurassic
well.
Park's a horror movie.
Yeah,
yeah, you forget. That
Jaws as
is.
Well
is
a horror movie. Yeah. So I think what I love about Together is because there's also been, even though I've said it before, where like a lot of these more like fancier horrors, they call it
that's called elevated.
Elevated horror. I hate that.
Yes.
But I get why people are using it. So because people would associate horror with schlock and B grade stuff like that.
So the term I was trying to explain has been used.
Yeah.
Elevated horror. That makes sense.
So obviously over the past 20 years, it's gotten more like horror's been getting more and more respect from standard audiences because of the A24s and the Neons and stuff like that, right? So, but the interesting thing about it is that like most of these horror movies always have to do with trauma or grief.
Yeah.
Even though they are great films and they do them well, it's almost like we're being over bombarded with every good horror movie being about trauma or grief.
Yeah.
That's why The Substance was interesting, because it was about body, it was about beauty standards, the impossible beauty standards women face every day, right?
Yeah.
Together is about a codependent relationship like how these people are starting to merge together, but they aren't ready for that just yet. You know what I mean? And there are so many gross, like there's so many gross imagery that is akin to The Thing as well, which is really cool.
Because what you get shown, and so I'm not giving much away, is that in some cases their bodies are like literally fusing together.
Yeah, and it's super gross. But like it's a cool little movie. I think there are moments where it's guilty too easily giving us the answer to something. This is happening because of this.
Fed.
Yeah, it's very too coincidental. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But
I always find the subtlety of what someone says very interesting. I like how you say a little movie.
Yeah.
And I'm always curious to unpack what that means. I think, could I take a stab at it?
Yeah.
In that it is a contained small movie. Like the whole movie does take place like in this house that they've moved into, this kind of country house.
Yeah.
And so like budget-wise and story-wise, it's contained to something small.
Yeah, it's not like Weapons, where Weapons feels like a horror epic. You know what I mean?
It feels on a big scale.
Yeah, it's Magnolia, but as a horror. It's multiple characters coming together, you know what I mean?
I managed to find space for Weapons.
Sick.
I juggled things around, and I even messaged the distributor. I was like, turns out I'm a fool for saying no to Weapons. I never had a chance to watch it. I still haven't seen it.
Fucking rocks,
but just based on you, based on the internet, based on other people that were also at the screening that you were at, it seems like deafening that this is just a great movie.
It's one of those movies where you got to watch it ASAP because people will spoil it online. Mm. You know
what
I mean?
So far, pretty good. I've seen some jokes and memes, but I don't feel like it's given much away. Because I think there is just, as you said, such an epic story to Weapons that I don't think you can actually explain it. It's a little bit like Everything Everywhere All at Once, where you're like, I actually don't know how I'm going to explain this to you.
Right. It's the best thing to explain with Weapons is you just tell people the initial butt is literally at 2:17 one morning, kids walked out their house and never came back. That's all they need to know.
Yes.
And then, like, go watch it. You know what I mean?
They climbed out of their windows and ran down the street and disappeared.
Yeah, like, you know, it's certain...
Everyone from one class except for one kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, there's certain
It's a lovely start. Mm. What a great little fucking hook.
Yeah, there's so many movies where, like, you have to try to... It's like Jaws. All you need to know is, a shark terrorizes a town. That's all you need to know. Yeah. You know what I mean? A seaside town. Like... Alien, all you need to know is that like something gets on board of a ship. You know what I mean? Like it's certain things where you don't want to over-explain. Like Project Hail Mary. We were talking about this earlier where like, because both me and Graham have read it. And when we read it, when we got hooked by the premise was, for me, was literally an astronaut wakes up on a ship. He has no idea why he's there.
Yeah.
All he and eventually starts to remember why he's there. But that's a great hook.
Yeah.
And even adding that second little nugget and why he's there is he's fucking humanity's savior.
Yeah, that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
That's
all you need to know.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. I'm really
so
enjoying
good.
That book.
It's such a fun read.
And, and it was such a great like beach book.
Yeah, it's a beach read.
It's a beach read where you put it down, sip a little gin and tonic, stare at the ocean, pick it up again.
It's also a great binge read where you can just read it in like two nights and you're like, you gotta know what's happening.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I it took me. I'm only about 2/3 through, and I read it quite a lot throughout the week. But I'm a relatively fast reader, but. My family around me were clapping these like JoJo Moyes books and Harlan Coben books.
Yeah, that's schlock.
And then I looked at it, I was like, the words are fucking huge on that page. And it's easy read. I was like, this book is about science.
Yes.
Yeah. There are pages about these experiments that he's doing.
Yeah. As you were saying,
protons, neutrons.
You were spitting crumbs all over there. And they're like, get away from me, nerd.
I was like, as much as it's an easy book, it's dense.
Yeah, it is dense.
No,
yeah.
But I'm loving it.
The theory is crazy. But like that's why I'm excited for the movie, because it's going to be hard not to make it as fun as the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still obviously seeing a little bit of Gosling in my imagination when I'm reading this book, and unfortunately that'll just happen.
Yes.
So I wish I was like you where you'd seen a different Ryland Grace in your head.
Yeah.
But I saw the trailer, then obviously knew this book existed, was excited to read it because it's only coming out in a few months. Mm-hmm. But now I like don't want to even see anything around this movie until I'm finished the book, because I don't want to imagine the other characters.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't want to imagine what certain characters are going to look like.
Yeah.
Also, I still don't want to give things away.
Yeah.
I feel like we're also in that phase in the the movie stratosphere now. Is back in the early 70s, that was a time of like people were writing books and then immediately optioned out. So like Godfather, I think it was called Love Story or something. Like the early days.
Love Story is a famous one.
Yeah, the Paramount era, that golden age of Paramount, like a lot of books were just freshly written and just adapted. Jaws was one of them as well.
But isn't that what's happening now?
But that's what I'm saying, is that like, it feels like we're in that time now where they're doing that, where like Mickey 17 hadn't even been finished.
Yeah.
And then they already optioned it.
It hadn't been published. Yeah.
Yeah. And like with Andy Weir's next book that he's writing, it's already been optioned.
Yeah.
For a movie, which I just find interesting. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, certainly one of the most interesting parts of the world we now live in is original idea, an original thought.
Yeah.
And so like a really smart writer for whatever fucking show is gold now in so many ways, because this is going to be an original thought that you hope. But yeah, it's not going to be bashed out by AI. The the future, like... Now that I'm going to be this dad and I'm thinking about the world that this little girl is going to grow up in, she's only going to know AI.
Yeah.
Most of her TV shows and content will be AI-generated shit for her.
Yeah.
So she'll have her own like TV channel made like for her, saying her name.
It's Black Mirror, dude.
It is Black Mirror. That's crazy. Wild. So that when someone's original thought and idea, like whether it's... on a canvas or in a TV show or in a movie, like that's going to be gold.
But that's the thing that me and Graham were speaking about it yesterday as well, is that
there'll be real bands and fake bands.
Yeah, but like we were speaking about yesterday, how like the future's actually looking pretty bright based on these original horror movies that are doing well. It's not just the horror movies. There are new movies that are coming out that are not a franchise or a reboot or a prequel or a sequel. They're original stories, even though like Sinners is basically from Dusk Till Dawn in Jim Crow era America.
But it's still wildly unique in many ways.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying, is those films are doing the best right now. And the CEO of Warner Bros. Has said that next year they've got their big slate are all original films.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
No, it's very exciting. No, the fucking Despicable Me 10s and fuck shit.
Anyways, yeah.
Lovely. Let's talk a little bit about Alien Earth.
Yes, Alien Earth.
Okay, that's it. Now we're over into TV show era now. What channel?
Disney.
Disney?
Disney Plus.
And so now what has very famously been a string of incredible movies... go take a deep dive into our Alien episode.
Yeah.
I stepped out the room and
it's a classic.
Carl and Graham talk about Alien for 2 hours.
It's a classic.
This is our first sort of Alien TV show.
Yeah, it's the first TV show in this universe.
What makes this special or different?
So, what makes it different? That's an interesting question. Just to set a premise. So, this is a prequel. It's set just before the events of Alien.
Yeah.
Starts off, I think it's 2120 starts off in, but there. Alien is 2122, I think. I can double check that, but when it first started off, I was a little bit like,
okay,
because the beginning is literally like a carbon copy of the beginning of Alien.
Yeah,
it starts in exactly the same way with like the little like helmet computer thing.
Yes,
Then it goes straight to them all waking up in the pods and it's doing like the crossfades.
Yes, everything.
It is exactly the same as Alien, but it quickly like derails that. Like it kind of sets all these people up as like false protagonists.
Yeah, exactly.
Because very, very quickly what happens is the ship that we begin on crashes and all these characters are killed.
Oh.
Okay. So. It's kind of establishing what Earth is in this time period where
that's
it's...
That's what I find interesting. Yes. Yeah.
Like, the whole world is basically controlled by four major corporations.
Yeah. Okay.
To the point where they're like...
We're not far away from that.
Yeah. To the point where, like, if one corporation wants to go into, like, another corporation's territory, it's like an invasion, basically. It's like an army invasion.
Yeah.
It would be, like, a major, like, threat sort of thing. But essentially... There's like multiple storylines going on. We have the story of these corporations are essentially competing to be who is the first one who is going to solve immortality.
Yeah.
Who is going to be the first one? Like it's, and they explain there's like different ways that they're all trying to do it. One of them is like cyborgs. One of them is synthetics.
Yeah, it's like whoever masters the like the master race going forward is going to control like the galaxy as we know it. Basically.
It's, right now, literally in 2025, we have the race for who can produce the best AI stuff.
Yes.
Don't let anybody convince you that the American economy is doing well because of Trump. He's doing fucking nothing.
Yeah.
He's not nothing. The tariffs, that's not doing it. What's propping up the whole fucking NASDAQ and the economy of the world right now
California.
is the race of who's producing good AI, be it
China
or Microsoft. And
yes.
So that's what's really like driving the economy right now, is this race, these corporations racing, because whoever can harness that really is going to fucking own the world.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's cool that it's kind of happening in some degree now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So our seemingly at this point in time, at least, our main group of characters are a bunch of kids who all had like some sort of terminal illness, who have been put into the bodies of like robotic synthetic bodies.
Yeah.
Okay.
As like they're like the first like test subjects to see if it's possible to put them into these bodies, essentially to make them immortal.
And these are characters. Kinds of characters that we see in future Alien movies.
Yeah, there's always like a robot character.
Yeah.
In this one, the robot is Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah.
Who I love. He's like love such Timothy. A great
Are
actor.
Any of the characters this in Alien Earth going to be characters of other
Alien movies? So.
Like younger versions of anyone?
I don't think so. Not at this point, at least.
No, but that's cool. It's a nice, fresh, but it's in the world of it. Yeah,
it's cool seeing these different, because through Alien, we've only known as Weyland-Yutani. That's the like the main corporation. They're the one who have the robots and stuff like that. And but this one, we're seeing four different companies. We've only seen two so far.
So in a way, you kind of know who wins in the end.
Yeah, but it's still it's interesting.
But there'll always be space for the others.
Because the main storyline is with a corporation that isn't Weyland-Yutani. It's they're based in what is called New Cyan or something. Yeah. Which is very, very interesting. But the interesting thing about the solving immortality thing is that these kids, even though they're being put in these synthetics, they tell you basically that your mind as a child has gone into this body. Therefore, because you're technically dead now, you aren't developing further. You haven't hit puberty yet. You haven't done all this. So you haven't experienced that. So your body as a child is in a grown-up synthetic, basically.
Because the synthetics never age. So they're put into the bodies of adults.
Yeah, so Timothy Oliphant's character reminds them, like, you aren't developing anymore.
Yeah.
You have to figure out what you've got now and use that. It's so interesting.
Only your brain can develop, but you're not going to develop through the development of your body.
Yeah, but all the like hormonal changes and that sort of thing that happen in your body don't happen.
So they don't.
And the way those affect your mind isn't going to happen.
Yeah,
to
so
them.
Their brains don't mature. So it's interesting seeing these grown up synthetics acting like children, like they are curious like children, they are childish like children, you know, they
that is cool.
It's so interesting that,
and they're all named after characters from Peter Pan.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
He calls them the Lost Boys.
That's so true. Sorry, carry on.
That sounds lovely.
Yes, and then what happens, like I said, this spaceship that we're initially set up crashes. It's a Weyland-Yutani ship. It crashes into the territory of this other company. Yeah. I think it's called Prodigy.
Yeah, he's like the guy who's in charge of it is like a young prodigy. He's like a playboy billionaire, trillionaire. Yeah it's crazy.
Yes. Yeah. And then it turns out, so then this group, these like kids who are in these like synthetic bodies are then sent into this crash ship as search and rescue.
Okay.
And that's kind of where we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
But very quickly learned this is a Weyland-Yutani ship that's been sent out to collect quote unquote samples.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of like, they've gone and collected like aliens.
Yeah.
Different kinds, not just like xenomorphs. I'm surprised how quickly it gets to the xenomorph though.
Yeah.
Like straight out the bat. Yeah. Like in the first episode, there's xenomorph like ripping people apart.
Yeah.
It seems like it's going to be very present throughout the whole show,
yeah.
Which I don't mind as long as they don't overdo it.
Is it a miniseries? Do we know?
I don't know. I know it's 8 episodes, but I don't know if it's a limited series or not.
Because I can't picture it going past that.
Yeah.
It's amazing how limited series sounds so much cooler than miniseries.
Yes.
Yeah,
like miniseries always had a sort of made-for-TV kind
of, it's
like,
so true,
sort of stain to it.
But like that's
where limited series is like, it's arty, it's limited.
Yes.
But I mean, that's one thing as well, though, is that I prefer shows that wrap things up per season. So, like, if the show got cancelled, it's fine because it's been wrapped up.
It should
it's
be.
Done.
It feels like it should be like an anthology vibe.
100%.
Where like the next season of it can just be what happened in the next hill.
Oh,
here's another one, or this is from the other people's perspective.
Yeah.
Because I hate cliffhangers.
I don't like to drag on.
Yeah, I hate cliffhangers, especially if the show doesn't come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Great example, Utopia, the British one.
Okay.
Like, cool little fucking weird sci-fi movie about a graphic novel that exists that is predicting all these like apocalyptic world events.
Okay.
And these guys are trying to get it. And it's such a cool concept. They remade it on Amazon, which was not very good.
Right.
And Fincher was supposed to do it, but he pulled out because he couldn't get the budget he wanted. But anyways, that show, the second season ended on the biggest cliffhanger and it got cancelled.
Oh, boo.
Boo.
Bastards.
Yeah, that's always disappointing.
So yeah, Alien Earth, it's out every Wednesday, huh?
I think so. Two episodes in so far.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's cool, man.
Yeah. It's well made. Like, it looks good.
Yeah. Do you know what I like about it as well? Is it's introducing, because the problem with all the other Alien stuff is that they aren't really introducing new interesting things anymore.
Mm.
I mean, Prometheus, you could argue, definitely did.
I was about to say the last interesting thing they did was David.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Fuck.
Yeah.
Best thing about those two, about Covenant and Prometheus, was David.
Definitely.
Fassbender.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Great character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see where it goes, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Very cool.
I am blissfully wading through episodes of Castle.
Cool.
Such a fucking fall asleep show. It's so cheesy. But what is cool about it, this is just a cheesy cop show on Disney. Old Nathan Fillion, he just bangs out 6-season goodies.
He's in The Rookie now.
No, which is great. But what is cool is if you watch it in enough succession, you can, you know, you just go from one episode to the next. They're just almost in a blur until you realize, oh shit, this must be a new season because the budget just like fucking, just all of a sudden the camera work and the lighting is just better. And you're like, ooh, why does everyone look a bit better? And you're like, oh, it's a new season, bigger budget.
It's funny. It's like on RuPaul's Drag Race, as all the first season looks like it's done in their garage. Yeah. And then like the second second season, they got money and you're like, whoa, this is a huge difference. Dan, you know?
It's amazing to see. Yeah. But no, we dig it. Mm. I've got to find my next binge show. You guys must help me find that.
Okay.
But no, I like a good easy little happy thing, especially at about 9:30 at night. I don't want to fucking have xenomorphs.
It's one of those shows. Yeah, it's one of those shows that you can put on and eat your meal too. You know what I mean?
Totally.
I can't watch anything too serious and I'm eating. Yeah. Like at the moment, sit down and eat and watch show is I'm rewatching Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown.
Yeah.
Freaking good. It's nice miss to watch him so much.
It's nice to watch eating shit while you eat.
Yeah. But that show's so much more than just that. Because I just watched the episode where he goes to Cuba and like he breaks down where Cuba is right now. Obviously, when it was done, I think in 2013 or something. But yeah, like that's one guy, that's one death that broke my heart was Anthony Bourdain. He is like legitimately one of my heroes. And that bummed me out. That and Philip Seymour Hoffman were the biggest gut punches for me. Now,
shit, man.
Anyways.
Listen, on a brighter note. Actually, I don't have much more brighter notes. But thank you for such a lovely day. Is there anything else burning inside?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, all good.
Magic. Thank you, guys. We'll see you guys again soon.
Definitely.
Coming up, we've got a lovely guest episode with the filmmaker behind Street Trash.
Cool.
Which is a very cool, very punk rock, quite bold and daring South African film.
Hmm.
A guy making the kind of films he wants to make. Speaking of Tarantino, he was able to get a really cool premiere of Street Trash at the New Beverly, which is Tarantino's cinema in LA. Cool. So no, it's very cool. It's fun and it's ridiculous and it is this kind of also just crazy horror. And we're going to have a special screening of it at the Bioscope at the end of August the 30th, because it's the kind of movie you want to watch at night in a nice group. So Ryan Kruger is a very cool filmmaker doing some interesting stuff in South Africa.
Cool.
Making quite authentically South African products,
okay,
but his own, which are these kind of crazy apocalyptic horrors.
Right.
Yeah. They set in Cape Town.
Cool.
Which I think is the coolest part of it all.
Yes.
And they sort of unashamedly themselves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I think is a lovely place for a filmmaker to be and a good example for other filmmakers to watch. A little bit like Tarantino is making the movies he wants to
exactly,
make.
Exactly, yeah.
He doesn't
that's
give
what
a
you
fuck
need.
If you think it's too pastiche or too homage. It's what he loves.
Yeah.
And he wants to make it, which is very cool. So, yeah, that's a nice lighter note. How about that? Okay. Magic. Thank you, guys. Thanks for a lovely day.
Yeah.
And we'll see you guys soon.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.